Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. On the podcast this week, we've got Lex Corwin, the founder and CEO of Stone Road Farms in California. We've featured his company's success stories in Cannabis Business Times over the past year or so, and we're pleased to do so again in this interview. Stone Road Farms, located up in Nevada City, California, has done a lot of things right by focusing on doing a small number of things very well. And this sense of focus has intrigued me, so I was glad to reach out and connect with Lex for this interview. The news hook is that Stone Road Farms has just launched its products in the Michigan cannabis market, and we certainly talked about that, but I was curious, what sort of guiding principles have led Lex and his team to hit this growth trajectory in an otherwise very difficult past 12 months? Well, we got into that. And you can read more about Stone Road Farms on CannabisBusinessTimes.com, but in the meantime, please enjoy my conversation with Lex Corwin. Well, hello, Lex, and thank you so much for joining the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk with you about Stone Road Farms and some recent news on your end and some broader industry trends that you may be observing along with the rest of us. To begin, you know, I'd like to, I guess, go with the most newsworthy piece out of Stone Road, of course, your recent launch in the Michigan market. Can you describe a bit of the work that went into that move?
Yeah, so we've constantly been, on the lookout for partners who, you know, share a lot of our same ethos on operations, cultivation, wanting to support other kind of small farmers in the way that we, cultivate ourselves in California. So we got put in touch with the Gamut team, and, they're a really small focused operator in Cheboygan, Michigan. And, they just shared a lot of the same values as us, and we're looking for a pre-roll brand to bring into that market, similar to how a lot of markets are starting to see like some major price compression. Michigan is no different. So, they were looking for a value-oriented pre-roll brand that could help them grab a lot of market share. So that's exactly what we're doing. We came to market with a 1 gram infused single and have a 5-pack in the pipeline. Basically just trying to bring, really high quality, all natural products at an affordable price. Exactly what we do in California, but for the Michigan market, which is now the nation's second largest rec market.
Absolutely. Yeah. Michigan has a lot of excitement going on there lately. With regard to the team at Gamut, wondering if you could maybe elaborate a bit on the values that they share with you and sort of how you guys, I guess, vetted them or how you came to the conclusion that this would be a great, efficient partnership.
Yeah, I mean, we just had to fly out there and meet them in person. That's the only way for us to really make, a full judgment call. For us, it was figuring out who exactly was going to represent the brand and really care about the suppliers and, just the whole manufacturing process. Like, obviously being based in California, we are, you can't just drop into the facility. You have to really trust your partners. And it was like understanding that this is, more of a small, like family owned operation, similar to how we are. Just finding partners that we knew were going to represent the brand well. And then obviously touring their facilities and seeing how, immaculately clean they were. Things like that, just making sure that of course, when everything's going well and easy, it's easy to just, laud your partners and, oh, you guys are doing such a great job. But it's really when, things go wrong, figuring out who's going to do the right thing. Continue to kind of bring the highest quality of products to market, even when, it's not necessarily the easiest, way forward. And so for us, finding out You know, finding a partner who is going to continue to source flour from, you know, small family owned, organic, biodynamic farmers, places that we really want to support and, you know, continue, you know, the legacy of, like, you know, kind of what they started in the industry they've built. And so, you know, finding a group that already had those connections, wanted to support those operators, and ultimately just replicate, like, our supply chain as close to California as possible in terms of using, you know, post-consumer materials, you know, supporting more, you know, diverse farms and operators, and just generally being, like, good stewards of, like, the community and the environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those are great sort of universal values that can be seen in all sorts of different markets. And I know that Michigan, you know, I suppose is fairly new to you, just in terms of on the operations side, but I'm curious if through your conversations with Gamut or just, in what you've learned so far, are there notable differences between the Michigan market and the California market, whether that's consumer demand trends or even on the regulatory side?
Yeah, I mean, every market is very unique and different in terms of, you know, the regs and all that. But, you know, ultimately, a lot of the consumers are the same, whether they're in, you know, California, Oklahoma, Michigan, Mass, you know, any other state that we operate, where it's like people just want a really high end product. They want a clean product and they want something that will, you know, work, be cost effective, and, you know, has nice packaging. And so it's like we're not really deviating from the playbook that we've established in California. It's just, you know, better incorporating the things that we've learned in California and the mistakes we've made in California, and just trying to basically launch in Michigan without replicating any of those mistakes. We always joke with our out-of-state partners that, you know, we come with 5 years of mistakes and a few million dollars, you know, so that it can, you know, avoid the same kind of pitfalls that we initially, you know, dealt with launching, you know, a new brand. So, I mean, ultimately, it's just we're really focused on product quality. You know, we don't have the huge million-dollar marketing budgets to do these splashy campaigns. So it's really like just we're hoping people will just judge us on the merit of, you know, our product and see that, you know, a lot of our competitors are using, you know, sub, you know, just inferior products, like whether it's, you know, using trim or distillate or fake terpenes. It's just like, you know, we don't really play in any of that. You know, we're just making really high quality cannabis products that are 100% pure and natural and just don't have any additives, and betting that the market, you know, will resonate with that.
Certainly. Yeah. It calls to mind a moment in story. You know, you recently spoke with my colleague Melissa Schiller for an article about the California market, and we can provide a link in you know, when this episode goes live. But of course, you provided a ton of terrific insights. But I wanted to, you know, I guess pull this quote out and see if you might elaborate on it, because it's a really good one that I really haven't seen articulated in many places. But here's the quote. There are so many brands that bring products to market that the cannabis industry is either one, not ready for, or two, there's just not a big enough group of people to support it. And that's the end of the quote. This seems very accurate to me. And it's also, like I said, it's a point that I'm not really seeing shared publicly very often, but it seems very true and insightful. Could you maybe explain a bit more about that quote and why it might be important to think about that?
Totally. I mean, just relating it to myself, it's like I am, you know, a regular cannabis consumer. I've basically been working in it my entire life. You know, Stone Road's the first place I ever grew cannabis when I was 16 years old in 2009. So it's like, for me, I've watched, you know, this industry evolve and mature. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you have to meet the market where it is. You know, I don't personally smoke 35, 40, 45% testing, you know, products. I feel like that would incapacitate me, but, you know, it's not about what I personally would want to see on the market. It's about talking to, you know, the people that are in the dispensary every day, once every 3 days, you know, the quote unquote super heavy users who are, you know, ultimately driving about 80% of this, you know, revenue for like the entire industry. It's, you know, the people that are in the dispensary multiple times a week. And it's like, you know, just because, you know, I, you know, couldn't really smoke something with both, you know, hash and diamonds, like the vast majority of the products that we push out, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to like stay away from, you know, making those products. It's ultimately like, you know, I kind of have in mind, like, you know, all the brands that are trying to build these like super low dose pre-rolls. And it's like, you know, a lot of great branding, great packaging, all that stuff. But it's like, ultimately, if there's not a consumer base large enough to, you know, support that, it's like, it's just going to be a continued challenge where it's like, we actively listen to the market. We actively are talking, you know, to the customer base, you know, of people who buy Stoner, but also people who have never heard of the brand, and being like, what do you want? And then basically building products with those exact, you know, specifications in mind. And, you know, just because it's not something I personally would be able to consume doesn't mean that we, you know, aren't going to produce it. So it's like, you know, I feel like the industry is sometimes can get ahead of itself where, you know, at one time we're forgetting like, you know, the core products that made the industry, you know, flower, pre-rolls, all natural products, just beautiful, you know, affordable products is, you know, people are overthinking it, you know, and it ultimately comes down to like, I think in cannabis, a lot of it is about, it's not about the idea, it's about the execution, where it's like, you know, we have, you know, we have thought of, you know, doing chewing gum, and we've, you know, dabbled in drinks, and we've explored doing vape carts. And it's all these things that we're like, okay, do we really know enough about these things to jump into these, you know, product verticals? And ultimately we decided, no, you know, let's stick to what we know. We know flower, we know cultivating, we know manufacturing. And those are ultimately our strong suits, and those are what we're going to double down on. And so it's like, you know, you see so many brands come out with products where it's like, are there enough consumers to actually support that product? And, you know, we'll continue to see, you know, how this industry evolves. But ultimately, you know, my very long-winded answer to that question is like, if you're not listening to the market, you're going to be like left in the dust.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a critical point for, you know, companies of all stripes, and certainly on the grow side. You mentioned talking to customers, and maybe that's the answer here, but what has been the best or most effective example of a feedback loop with those customers, whether that's literally talking to them or looking at certain types of sales data that might be coming back to you?
I mean, the thing that I can really pinpoint is when we were coming to market more aggressively in terms of really ramping our production, we got a little bit of investment, and we, you know, I think it was 2019, early 2020, Fuzzies was controlling the infused market in California. They were like the number one selling, you know, brand. They had their like distillate and hash and distillate and diamonds and all these different combos. And, you know, we really started talking to people, why are you buying Fuzzies? What do you like about it? And they're like, oh, it's the potency. It's how hard it hits. It's the unique mixtures of, you know, different concentrates. And then we're like, okay, what do you not like? And they're like, well, I don't like the high from distillate. So it's like, okay, so we went and we looked and we were like, what could we do that has, you know, multiple concentrates that taste good, that has a good high, that doesn't give you that kind of like head high that, you know, distillate is kind of known for. And so we ultimately settled on using, you know, solventless THCA powder, also frequently referred to as diamonds in the industry, and ice water hash, a product that we had been making and producing pre-rolls with since 2017. So for us, you know, that launched our hash and diamond infused singles and five packs, which basically, you know, allowed us to grow our business in from, you know, 2019 to 2020 or 2020 to 2021, you know, over 700%, you know, really turning us from a niche brand in, you know, maybe 20 to 40 stores to, you know, a pretty recognized brand in a few hundred stores in California doing sales of, you know, a few million dollars. So for us, it was, you know, listening to the consumer, making changes to, you know, a product that was already very popular, and then just doing our own twist on it. You know, that obviously meant, you know, using plastic-free packaging. That meant, instead of using trim as the, you know, the base biomass, using smalls, and ultimately just bringing like a higher quality product to market at a similar price point. And it's like, you know, you fast forward 3 years and it's like, no disrespect to Fuzzies, but it's like, you don't see them anywhere anymore as someone who spends all of his time in dispensaries. And it's like, you know, we are actively grabbing market share and you know, deliver to over 400 accounts in California this year, and would deliver to a lot more if they didn't have you know, payment issues. So you know, for us, it's listening to the consumer, making changes, doing our own spin, and then just really like doubling down on our formula. And you know, even if it doesn't work in the first 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, you know, keep iterating, keep changing, and really finding something that works and resonates with consumers.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like just a really great, clear set of guiding principles to keep a company like Stone Road on a growth trajectory at a time when you're seeing, you know, larger companies, MSOs of different stripes, pulling back or phasing out different segments of their business or what have you. So I guess what I wanted to ask there was, you know, of course, you know, as you mentioned in that same feature written by Melissa, you had specifically mentioned operating Stone Road Farms with a fairly lean team. So I wanted to ask about like communication dynamics between you and COO Sabrina Wheeler. And so maybe taking that Diamond Infused 5-packs example, and putting into this question, or maybe another example might be more germane, but I'm curious, just, you know, that curiosity about internal processes and checking yourself and listening to consumers, how does that kind of play out in a communication style in a very lean team, if that makes sense?
I mean, I think having a really lean team of just basically me, Sabrina, a few, you know, part-time admins, you know, our support staff, and you know, the cultivation team, it really helps communication, because it's not like, you know, when you're sometimes dealing with these huge organizations and there's like 10 different people on an email and then no one responds, you know, it's like, what's the point of having all of these, you know, people when like you can't get an answer? And it's just like, you know, the expression, too many cooks in the kitchen. It's like, we see that all the time in cannabis, and it really is starting to change dramatically, where you do have, you know, a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, like doing layoffs and slimming down your team. But I mean, Sabrina and I do like literally everything from dealing with our, you know, 150 plus active, you know, active meaning like ordering at least every 4 weeks, you know, stores in California, you know, all of our, you know, working with our out of state partners for like the three other states besides California that we operate in. But yeah, I mean, it just means like, one, you have to be willing to do the work, you know, like relentless 12, 14, 18 hour days, literally, having a really core trusted team, you know, paying people well, you know, talent is expensive. It's one of the most, you know, it's one of the biggest expenses in any organization. So making sure you have, you know, the right people on your team. And then just, you know, communication and transparency are key. It's like, there's no time for games in the cannabis industry. It's like, if you're dealing with someone who's like playing a lot of games and you're not sure if you can get a straight answer out of them, it's like, okay, run for the hills, you know, because it's like, it's too competitive. It's too low margin. There's too high of taxation, you know, to really be fooling around. It's like, you have to be extremely dialed in operationally, because it only takes 1, 2, 3 bad batches, big mistakes, big miscommunications to really just to kill your brand. I mean, in 2020, we, you know, we basically were at the, we had an issue with a piece of our supply chain, which basically led to, you know, just under $800,000 worth of product failing over a 6-week period, which basically knocked out like an entire quarter's worth of available sellable product. And, you know, that would have killed a lot of brands, especially at the size we were, where it's like, we weren't even, you know, we weren't even doing over $3 million a year at that time. It's like we were significantly smaller. And so for us, you know, basically looking at the pieces, being able to pivot, being really flexible and light on our feet, you know, allowed us to basically like stave off an extinction event that would have, you know, killed a lot of other small brands. And, you know, we've now, you know, fast forward 3 years and it's like the industry has not gotten, you know, any easier. In fact, it's gotten more competitive and more difficult as basically the fundraising environment has dried up, leading to retailers not paying distributors not paying, you know, manufacturers and, you know, that entire ripple down the supply chain where ultimately the farmers are getting screwed, you know, has led me to really believe it's like, you've got to keep your circle small and you really have to just work with people you enjoy working with and that have your back. You know, it's like we use 4 or 5 key manufacturers. They give us terms. They basically help us with, you know, whatever is needed. My team is super small. You know, our PR team is small. Our legal team is small. And we ultimately just, you know, we work with people we want to work with and we work with people who can perform. There's just absolutely no room anymore for fluff in the industry, which I feel like had, you know, dominated 2019 to 2021.
Yeah. I mean, it really seems like, well, 2023 might be a year of significant shakeout across the industry. And I wanted to just,
it already has.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. And I wanted to touch on that payment issue that you mentioned there, kind of in passing, this essentially debt issue up and down the supply chain and how growers or brands might either insulate themselves from that or you know, guard against bad deals. And you kind of already started answering this question, but it seems to me like it's not just California and it's not just, you know, right now. This is you know, credit and payment issue is very pervasive. And you got into it quite a bit with Melissa in that article. So not to reiterate things, but how can growers kind of protect themselves knowing that the payment supply chain, as it were, is in pretty bad shape?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely kind of went in a little bit on that article because it's just, you know, that day especially, we were just facing so many issues. But, you know, it is, you know, like I said in the article, it's like the industry is inherently broken in California. It's a little better in other states that are more, I mean, honestly, corporate, you know, it's like you have a higher likelihood of getting paid by some of these MSOs than by like the large groupings of, you know, small mom and pop shops. But it's like, you know, just to kind of answer your question with statistics, it's like, we delivered to probably like 186 stores last June. And then you fast forward to December and we delivered to about 70. So it's like we straight up eliminated delivering to half of our, you know, to half of our customer base because it was A, either we didn't think we were going to get paid. The payment terms were taking 150, 200, 250 days. And it's like, you know, if you want to take 100 days, but be communicative with me, that's fine. Like, we're happy to, you know, wait and, you know, try to be the best partner we can be. But it's like, if you're going to give me radio silence and you owe us, you know, $25,000 for, you know, literally months at a time, it's just like, we're just not doing that anymore. Like when every cannabis company's entire metric of growth was based on revenue and not like, you know, EBITDA or actual like cash flow and like closeness to, you know, proximity to profitability. It's like, yeah, we would deliver to literally anyone because it's like, if we could keep beating on a month over month basis, we could continue to see, you know, investment dollars, which would come in and basically, you know, cushion and, you know, basically subsidize, you know, our losses on the retail level. But like now that entire kind of tranche of capital has been dried up, like we really are forced to only work with people who pay us, which it seems crazy when you say it out loud because it's like we are a consumer packaged good company. But there are a lot of people that just don't have the memo. I mean, right now we have easily $500,000 of, you know, very, very, you know, delayed AR. where it's not even close. You know, it's people that have owed us balances for a year, for 400 days, for 500 days. And so for us, it's like, you know, we're in civil action with a number of these retailers. We've sent demand letters to dozens. You know, but ultimately it's like, how do you operate and how do you grow in a market that is inherently broken, where you can be chasing, you know, 20% of your retailers, you know, for 100, 200, 300 days. And it's like, you can't, you know, that's why I have such a lean team. It's like, I would love to have a personal assistant again. You know, it's like, I would love to have, you know, a director of marketing again. But it's like, ultimately, it's like when a vast majority, not a vast majority, but I would say 80, you know, only 80% of your accounts, even once you've whittled down the accounts, pay anywhere near the net terms, you know, there has to be, you know, extreme measures basically employed to make sure that you don't go out of business.
Yeah. And that just certainly underscores a lot of the tactics and strategies that you mentioned earlier in this conversation. And I think just in general, this topic is going to be, I guess, discussed more and more publicly as this year goes on. I know Colorado regulators are really trying to crack down on it in that market. But this is a deeply rooted challenge. So I did want to end and turn toward maybe a lighter note and just get a sense of, you know, as this challenging year keeps unfolding, as we head into the spring here, where are you finding new or rejuvenating optimism in this industry?
I mean, since we did like the big cut on the retailer count, we, you know, business has gotten a lot better. You know, we've really focused in on the retailers that are good partners and being able to support them and grow with them and, you know, ultimately forge, you know, new relationships. We, you know, recently have gotten into two large, you know, chains of stores in California, and they've been, you know, great partners to us. And just really, you know, it's like the industry is fixing itself. It is healing, as you would say. You know, you have a lot of bad operators who are forced out of business. You have a lot of retailers who, you know, are basically getting sued into oblivion, or the state's going to pull their license in, you know, April or May or whenever this excise, you know, excise tax payment is due. So you have the industry just like naturally, like people who didn't have good businesses or, you know, steady operations, those are the ones that are going to be forced from, you know, the industry. And then the good operators, the people with, you know, strong supply chain, those are the ones that are going to be able to grab all of this open market share. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. And, you know, we expect this trend to further accelerate through 2023. And then, you know, but ultimately we're bullish. You know, we're bullish on the brand, we're bullish on the industry, and we're ultimately bullish on cannabis, because we know that it's not going away anytime soon. And, you know, once the regulators can kind of get out of our way, you know, there is a bunch of major growth ahead.
Certainly a lot of major opportunities on the horizon. And yeah, it is just a good reminder that these are early days here. And we're largely talking about California, but of course there are all sorts of markets flipping on with different rules and different playing fields. So it's never a dull moment, I suppose.
Never.
Lex, it was great getting a chance to talk with you today about some super timely and important topics. And yeah, really appreciate the conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, and hope you have a lovely weekend.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Lex Corwin of Stone Road Farms. I know I did. Like I said, we've written about Stone Road Farms a number of times over the past year or so, mostly in features written by my colleague Melissa Schiller. So this was actually my first chance me personally getting to talk to Lex. And it was great just hearing from him and sort of getting some insight into how their company has been growing over the past year in a very difficult environment. I guess there's a lot of different ways to run a cannabis business, of course, It's a tough environment for anyone, but it's great to hear some success stories like this, even in the face of pretty incredible challenges on the financial and economic side, like Lex laid out there. And again, I mean, like we say every week, these are the sorts of themes and issues that we're going to be exploring at Cannabis Conference. Here we are, cutting this episode at the end of March. We're ticking into April. Spring has sprung. And we're still a few months out from Cannabis Conference, but the schedule of events is up. We've got speaker announcements coming in the very near future, so keep an eye out for that. And a lot more news coming your way between now and the show itself in August out in Las Vegas. So check out CannabisConference.com for more info. Sign up for the newsletter while you're there. Make sure you get all the news that way. And other than that, stay tuned here. We're going to keep getting into more conversations like this beyond the show between now and Cannabis Conference 2023.